So hi, Dr. Jogin, and welcome to the Healthiest Podcast. You're with me, Karanveer, and this is India's oldest continuously running show and podcast on health and fitness and science. So, you know, iSTEM is doing some really interesting work, you know, and you particularly. So tell me a little bit about your journey to start with, you know, from your childhood to here. You've done some really amazing things. So tell us about that journey and how it cumulated, or right now it's at iSTEM.
Sure. So thank you, Karanveer, for inviting me on this podcast. It's an honor for me. So I'm not sure if we want to go all the way back to childhood, but I did my medicine in Ahmedabad. I did my MBBS, and then I went abroad to the US. I tried to find a residency, and fortunately, I couldn't get one. So that's the story of how I started. And I went into clinical research. So I ended up with doing clinical research with pharma. I came back in 2001 and I joined Quintiles. I was part of the founding team that set it up in India. And I headed up their global cardiac safety business. And in 2007, again went back to the US. I was the CEO of a joint venture between Quintiles and Thermo Fisher. In North Carolina. I headed that up for about 8 years. And then I said, okay, there's enough corporate life. I started discussing with various scientists that I met about what next steps. And we got really interested in the stem cells and how they convert into any cell of the body. So that's how iSTEM started. And in 2016 is when we incorporated, and in 2017 is when we started work. So that's
why did you pick this out of the 10,000 molecules and the 10,000 problems that we talk about? Why did you pick this problem or this issue?
So there are two reasons. One is in terms of the science that goes in, the retina is considered an immune privileged organ. So what that means is it is easier to put stem cells in the retina than in any other part of the body. So that way, if you want to start on stem cells, you first, generally most companies start in the eye. And then once they master the eye, they go to other tissues. So that's one reason. The second reason is that you need a very small amount of cells to do it. So in one vial, you have doses for 20 people that you can easily do, right? So it's very easy to do that. So it's that way, you need a smaller amount of cells. The reason why we got into this business in the first place is because when we started discussing the whole cell and gene therapy landscape, now the landscape is such that it is going to transform medicine as we know it over the next 10 to 15 years, right? A lot of diseases that are incurable are going to start becoming curable. There is only one big problem with that. That is, a lot of the gene and cell therapy products that are being developed in the West are going to be priced at $300,000-$400,000 for an injection. This is not sustainable, not in the West, certainly not here. And what that meant is we wanted to figure out how to democratize access to these platforms. And that's the purpose through which we started iSTEM. We didn't start it so that, you know, let's make a ton of money or something. We wanted a purpose wherein we can make sure that the benefit of these new age therapies are available to the masses. And that's the reason why we started iSTEM.
So, you know, I think the one thing unique about the biotech industry, and I'm kind of part of it with my company, is that none of us actually start with the intention of making money. In fact, that's never, you know, part of the agenda. It's all about doing good.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be a purpose, which is what I say. If I wanted to make money, I had a very, very nice job. Extremely nice job.
That's a little bit. One thing which you have spent a long time in clinical trials and with Quintiles and Thermo Fisher, all of them are you know, very well known companies, and I know Quintiles quite well. How is clinical trials changing with 2000, with 20 and COVID-19? Are we going to see a change in the clinical trials procedure?
I have a little bit of an unconventional view on this. I don't think procedures should change. because those procedures are there for a reason. You have to get your first phase one. You have to show safety. You have to then get into a larger one where you have to show safety and efficacy. Then you've got to go for efficacy in phase three. And there's a reason why those checks are in place. Because when those checks are not in place, a lot of harm can happen when a bad drug gets to the market. So I think the overall framework is very sound. But what needs to change is more iterative planning, faster approvals, automatic approvals in some cases, and compressing the whole timeline. I mean, how did we get to phase three for vaccines in 1 year, right? That is something that was unheard of before. Previously, we used to be at Quintal, we used to say it's a 5 year journey from phase one to phase three. Now it's already 1 year, but the process has to remain the same. Although there is a lot of inefficiencies that just get compressed now as we move forward.
What do you think about the clinical trial process in India and what can be improved?
I think the first thing is that, and this is not just something that the DCGI themselves can do, this is something that the companies and the DCGI have to jointly do, is that there has to be a shared element of trust between the two parties. And I think that is missing. Whenever trust is missing, what that means is that there is a lot of processes that have to be created in order to bridge that trust. Those processes are time-consuming, they're costly, but if you look at it from the DCGI's point of view, they might be very important, right? And if you look at it from the pharma company view, they're probably, you know. So I think I cannot answer that question from just one side, which is what should the DCGI do? The question is, what can we do as an ecosystem to enhance further trust and, you know, enhance transparency? So can the companies also be very transparent about what they're doing, especially when things go wrong? When things go right, everybody is transparent. But when things go wrong, are we sufficiently transparent to engender the trust that allows a regulator to create a process which is based on exceptions? Right now, the process is based on the general assumption that if this process is not there, the companies will never do this. Right? So that is a constant process, a constant conversation that needs to happen between the two parties.
Let me ask you a specific question. You know, we have this concept of adverse drug reaction reporting.
Yes.
Do we have that in India? Because I don't think anybody is aware of, you know, either a patient or doctors, and neither have I found any form online or offline, which, you know, post the fourth stage of clinical trials, a person, the continuous fourth stage, which every drug is in, you know, a person can report.
Oh, if it makes you feel any better, the post-marketing scenario in the US is not much better. I think there is a significant gap in post-marketing adverse drug reactions. And the problem is very simple, right? I mean, if you have a drug that is making a huge amount of money, the incentive to report an adverse reaction on that drug will obviously, from a financial level, be low until it reaches a dam and then dam breaks. And then all of a sudden, like we had, I think in 2003 or 4 when Vioxx had to be recalled by Merck. But that, so let's just talk about that Vioxx thing. There are a lot of, because I was involved in that, because Vioxx was directly related to a QT prolongation, which is cardiac safety, which is what we were doing. There were a lot of people who thought that Vioxx should not have been recalled, that the prolongation was very small, it could be managed, it could be tailored to specific groups, it could be tailored to exclude certain people who are at risk and so on. But Merck took a voluntary decision and said, you know what, we're recalling. And they went overboard when they found that ADE. And what that did is increase the, even today, the reputation of Merck is defined by that episode. So what companies need to do is look for, because in science, the only thing that you have is credibility, nothing else. No amount of marketing can fulfill that gap. So companies need to look at the next 10 to 15 years and say that, no, my credibility over the next 10 to 15 years is much, much more important than their financial result for next year. And that's a hard thing to do. It's a very easy thing to preach, but it's a very hard thing.
I'm jumping, stages of clinical trials here, but, you know, we have stage one, the clinical trial stage, which we do with animals and primates. Yeah. We've had a lot of, problem in that from an environmental perspective and so on, with the result, certain European countries have actually, the Czech Republic, Eastern Europe are much ahead from us. And our drugs have to actually go there for clinical trust testing. Even Malaysia and Indonesia offer much better labs. In the 2000s, 2004-5, clinical trials were supposed to be the next sunrise industry in India, after IT, and there were literally 300 clinical trial companies. But then certain fiascos happened and certain government regulations happened, and now we have, I think, 20 or 30 real clinical trial companies left from those 400. What do you think we should do? Can we give, more like animal testing could be allowed? What do we need to do to boost and make it easier for clinical trials?
See, it all starts again. I want to talk about, if you look at informed consent, right? Now we can keep talking about as much of the letter of the law of informed consent as much for, and I can still guarantee you that companies will adhere to the letter of the law, and even then the patient would not understand a word of it, because this is India, right? We've got a different relationship between a patient and a doctor. In India, a doctor says sign this, they'll sign it, right? It's as simple as that. You can say informed consent, you have these 7 pages of informed consent, each line by line people have gone through, but the patient will sign it. So that's the reality. I think it is important, again, it's important to, or, and this is not easy, for the doctors to themselves understand and explain to the patient really well why they are signing up. Because I think that the whole root cause of that entire fiasco was a significant distrust whether the pharma companies were actually recruiting guinea pigs, right? We were very much there in because I was part of Quintiles, and they had all these, when those notifications happened, overnight the pharma company said, sorry, okay, fine, we won't do it here, we'll do it elsewhere. I mean, they weren't really, it didn't really harm them. It harmed a lot of people in India because there were a lot of employment in clinical trials that just overnight vanished. But other than that, the pharma companies went, because we used to do global trials for them, and they said, oh, no, India, okay, fine, let's do Malaysia and Thailand instead. For them it was, so first of all, I don't think we have the kind of leverage we think we do, to be quite blunt, right? People can go to other places as well, but how to fix it is, from again, it's, I keep using the word trust, that without trust, there is nothing you can do to fix it. I'll be very blunt. You can create reams on reams of paper, and you can create a lot of SOPs, which a lot of people will get employment because they have to fill those in. But ultimately, if your principal investigator is somebody who you can trust to be ethical and trust to make sure that they are explaining things the right way to the patient, and trust that they truly understand what a clinical trial is, which is that this is not to give a new medicine to a patient. This is to figure out if the medicine works on the subject. The difference between a subject and a patient, they have to understand. And if they don't understand, it will never get there. So that's my long answer to a short question.
Great. So, we could keep talking, but I think we have a limitation on time. But now, what is the next stage at India, and with the drug, and where do you see it going?
So, we've got some excellent investors, thankfully. We've got both of them who are, I mean, we've got all our investors are former Quintiles people, so that helps. They'll know the drug development pathway. We have India, we've got Kotak who has joined. So we've got a very good investor base now. Now our focus is to get human data. And we are looking at getting that in the next 12 months. Once we get human data, then we move to the next stage. So we're looking at starting those trials as soon as possible.
Well, it was great talking to you, Dr. Jogin, and what a pleasure. And you're doing some really interesting work. So hopefully we'll see a lot more of you and your work in the coming days and months.
Thank you, Karnveer. I really enjoyed this topic, and thanks for inviting me on the show.